Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at mathworks.com.
On Point is a production of NPR and WBUR Boston. The program is made possible by your financial support. Please pledge online at WBUR.org.
From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. When CBS's Bob Schieffer asked Nebraska Senator Chuck Hagel on Sunday whether he would seek the Republican presidential nomination, Senator Hagel said this about his party.
I'm not happy with the Republican Party today. It has drifted from the party of Eisenhower, of Goldwater, of Reagan, the party that I joined. It isn't the same party. It's not. It's been hijacked by a group of single-minded, almost isolationist, insulationist, power projectors. That's not what Eisenhower talked about in 1961 when he probably gave one of the best speeches ever given by a president.
Remember that speech, Eisenhower's farewell? Here's a famous bit of it.
In the councils of government, we must guard against the acquisition of unwarranted influence, whether sought or unsought, by the military-industrial complex. The potential for the disastrous rise of misplaced power exists and will persist.
We have three heirs to very big Republican names with us today. Joining me first from New York is Theodore Roosevelt IV. He's an investment banker, a member of the Council on Foreign Relations, former chairman of the League of Conservation Voters. His great-grandfather is Theodore Teddy Roosevelt, the 26th President of the United States. Theodore Roosevelt, Ted Roosevelt, thanks for being with us.
Delighted to be here.
And with us from Irvine, California, is Peggy Goldwater Clay, columnist for Orange Coast Magazine and a Republican and community activist in Orange County. She's the youngest of Barry Goldwater's four children and was 19 years old when he announced he would run for president in 1964. Peggy Goldwater Clay, thank you very much for being here.
Thank you so much, Tom. I appreciate being here.
And from Washington, Susan Eisenhower, chief executive of the Eisenhower Group, a Washington-based public affairs and business consulting firm that operates internationally. She's written extensively on international relations. She's author of Mrs. Ike, Portrait of a Marriage. Her grandfather, Dwight D. Eisenhower, was the 34th president of the United States. Susan Eisenhower, thank you for joining us.
Tom, thank you for having me.
Now, I don't want to present or pretend that you three all have exactly the same view of what's going on with the Republican Party today, but you've all been making some interesting noises and statements about it, and we want to get a sense of how you and your particular positions, unique positions practically, see what's going on. Susan Eisenhower, let me go first to you. Your grandfather was a famously moderate Republican. So from the Eisenhower shoes, what do you see, your shoes now, what do you see happening with the GOP today?
Well, I think the Eisenhower years are actually rather reminiscent of the time we're in now. This was the post-World War II period. The Cold War was well underway, and the Eisenhower administration had to decide how to manage a long struggle with an aggressive adversary overseas. This was a time of military buildup, but it was also a time of industrial expansion in the United States. Eisenhower certainly considered the nation's fiscal health as being a critical part of America's national security posture. And I think, regrettably, today we've completely forgotten that the financial health of this country is every bit as important to our long-term future as our national security endeavors. As a matter of fact, the way that Congress in general and certainly the administration has viewed fiscal expenditures, I think, is distressing for all traditional Americans and also especially for members of the Republican Party who had always seen this as a primary value.
Your grandfather, a couple of things he said. One, here, I despise people who go to the gutter on either the right or left and hurl rocks at those in the center. Two, I hate war as only a soldier who has lived it can, only as one who has seen its brutality, its futility, its stupidity. And finally, I have one yardstick by which I test every major problem, and that yardstick is it good for America? Have Republican policies of late been good for America, Susan Eisenhower?
Well, I think what's happened with Republican leadership at the moment is really part of a larger trend. You could argue that many of these trends were in place when we had a Democratic administration. in the White House and in Congress. The truth is that our political system is very partisan, perhaps because elections are won at the margins now. There is less of an opportunity to be magnanimous, to be cooperative. And, of course, we all know, and this has been very well analyzed, that we live on wedge issues these days rather than the larger overarching issues of that were considered at that time. So I would say that any political party who's going to stake out a strategic vision for this country, we're in grave danger of losing our international leadership position, and a lot of that has to do with our own domestic policies.
Are you happy with the GOP's strategic vision for the country right now?
I don't think we know what the Democrats or the Republicans think about our long-term strategic picture, and that includes everything from education to our financial posture, as I mentioned before. Mm. I'm a Republican, however, and so my primary concern is whether my party is addressing the issues that I'm worried about. Mm.
Peggy Goldwater Clay, I don't want to present again each of these great icons that we're talking about, who you're all descended from today, as on the same page. Your dad once called Susan's grandfather, his policies, a dime store New Deal. And Dwight Eisenhower once told your father, he said, "Barry, you speak too quick and too loud." Your father's sort of famously a firebrand. But when you look at the GOP today, Peggy, how do you see it? Is it your father's GOP? Is it one you're happy, comfortable with?
No, I'm not comfortable with what's happening today with the political scene. I don't think Dad would be either. I've kind of come back to a moderate conservative. I am a Republican, as Susan said. She is also. But my issue also is with the fiscal irresponsibility. I feel like all is not right with, A, the world and our country. One thing that Dad used to say, and I think I echo his sentiments on this, is that the government needs to stay out of the bedroom, boardroom, and businesses. It frightened him that the government was creeping slowly into the states and their rights as they could run their own government within each state. The government was just I feel right now they have way more than they can handle, and I'm not happy with everything that's going on.
So you're pointing in part there at the recent Republican emphasis on values and maybe government oversight or intervention there. Barry Goldwater, your father, finally, in his late years, supporting abortion and gay rights?
Well, why not? You know, I don't think the government has any right to tell anybody who they can be and what they can do.
And that from your dad, very much in the tone of his way of looking out on the world, Theodore Roosevelt IV, Ted Roosevelt in New York. Yours is the longest stretch. You're the fourth. We're going all the way back to the beginning of the last century for Teddy Roosevelt. So we'll think about how he saw the world. But what about you as a Republican in that family line? What's your view of your own party today?
I think, like my fellow participants on the show, very concerned about the direction of the Republican Party. And let me just take two areas for concern that I share. Mm. One is the environment. And I think the environment and the need to deal with something like climate change represents an opportunity. And unfortunately, the administration looks at it as something that they don't want to acknowledge. And I think that's the wrong position. It's an opportunity because we are going to be the policy abatement policies that we want to put in place to address climate change will represent a very large economic transformation. And it's a transformation which will help us deal with the need to have a rational energy policy, and it also help us deal with, I think, national security issues. So good leadership from an administration on this, I think, is a wonderful opportunity for the country. It will hope over time it will provide jobs, et cetera.
And how would you grade Republican leadership on environmental issues, the Bush record on environmental issues as we sit here in 2007?
Well, with the exception of what I think was superb leadership on the part of the president in creating a marine reserve off the Hawaiian Islands, other than that and a little bit of progress on the wetlands, this administration gets virtually a zero for its environmental leadership. There's just no way that you can say that they've shown good, thoughtful environmental leadership.
That was a pretty gigantic issue to your great-grandfather. If Teddy Roosevelt were looking out on that, how do you imagine he'd respond?
Well, I never like to put words in the mouth of somebody who's not here to defend himself, but I think he'd be appalled, frankly. And the second issue that worries me is I look at our foreign policy, and Susan talked about this a little bit, is I think the idea of trying to export democracy via military means in the Middle East is a very poorly thought out idea. And we're seeing today the reaction throughout the Middle East, but in Iraq particularly, the difficulties in trying to do that. And one of the geniuses about President Eisenhower when he was in Europe was he understood the importance of alliances, and he worked very hard to keep the alliance that we had in World War II together, and it was not easy to do so. The British despised the French and vice versa. The Brits looked down on us as being not very good fighters at the beginning of the war, and the Soviets, of course, distrusted everyone. But he understood the importance of the alliance in trying to defeat Nazi Germany, and he worked incredibly hard to hold it together. This administration doesn't understand the importance of alliances and doesn't like working with other countries generally, particularly if it's hard.
We're talking this hour with three heirs of towering GOP icons about the state and fate of the Republican Party. Susan Eisenhower is with us, granddaughter of Dwight D. Eisenhower, the president. Peggy Goldwater Clay, daughter of Barry Goldwater, is here. And Theodore Roosevelt IV is with us, great-grandson of Teddy Roosevelt. Here's just a little very old recording of former President Theodore Roosevelt in an address to the Boys Progressive League at the Hotel Manhattan in 1913.
The principles for which we stand are the principles of fair play and a square deal for every man and every woman in the United States.
Fair play and a square deal for every man and every woman in the United States. Ted Roosevelt, is that still at the heart of the Republican Party's ambition, vision?
I'm afraid that we may have lost that vision. And I feel strongly that what our economic policy in this country needs to do is make sure that we have equality of opportunity. And I'm not sure that we're doing that. I'm not sure the administration has tried to put in place, I think, a better educational policy, but they've been partially, at best, successful in that. And it's pretty clear to me that as we live in an era of greater globalization, the role of education and having an educated population is going to be one of the best ways in which we can compete with rising economies outside the United States. And we need to use and make sure that our brain power is at least as good, if not better, than other countries with whom we're going to engage in commercial relations. Mm.
Peggy Goldwater Clay, you heard at the top of the hour Republican Senator Chuck Hagel of Nebraska and his critique with Bob Schieffer said, "I'm not happy with the Republican Party today. It's drifted from the party of Eisenhower, of Goldwater, your dad, of Reagan. The party that I joined isn't the same. It's been hijacked by a group of single-minded, almost isolationist power projectors," and right on down. What do you think as you hear that, Peggy?
I think he's partially right. I think that government that we have right now is leaning a little too far right. I think that religion and politics don't really go together, and I see that there's more of this happening in our government.
And your father's view on that front, you talked about the bedroom and the boardroom he wanted to keep government out of. When it comes to the church?
Dad said the far right scared the hell out of him.
Susan Eisenhower, this is you're sounding kind of in the same ballpark as Barry Goldwater, and I'm not sure it would have looked that way in the 1960s. What do you think is driving together families with these rather divergent, within the Republican spectrum, legacies?
Well, I think, you know, the times in which we live and our response to a series of national crises. And I think, as I said earlier, I think that politics has changed a lot. It was always contentious. I mean, I loved your previous quote about the exchange between Eisenhower and Goldwater.
Yeah.
I mean, it was always contentious, but today the way people approach the campaigns are completely different. I mean, think of the past campaigns. Every candidate was expected to articulate a vision for this country. As Ted Roosevelt said, we don't think about equal opportunity for every man and every woman. We don't address a series of proposals to try and tackle that objective. All these candidates do in both parties is to stand up and try and tell their base of voters what they want to hear. The whole strategy for getting elected is to make sure that your folks come out and vote. It's not to persuade anybody else that you've got ideas about the future direction of the country. And I think we're all the poorer for it. And frankly speaking, I mean, I travel all over the world on business, and I travel to especially emerging markets.
Mm-hmm.
And we've got a real challenge here. We take our leadership in the global community for granted, but we simply can't do that anymore.
You're laying problems at the feet of both parties. We're really interested in the GOP today, but was it the same way when you were traveling in the, let's say, the Clinton years in the 90s? Or is this, cold shoulder abroad, come right along with the Bush administration's policy?
No, I think there's no question that America's standing in the world is considerably worse today than it was at any time I've ever traveled overseas. And I lived actually abroad during the Vietnam period, and it's nothing next to the public opinion around the world right now. This is deeply alarming because we do live in a globalized world where cooperation, business cooperation with peoples of other cultures and other countries is absolutely essential. It's going to be essential for our own prosperity going forward. Do you know we've got a draconian visa set of regulations in this country? It may be getting better around the margins, but the truth of the matter is we don't want foreigners coming to this country cooperating with our scientists and our educational institutions. America, to the rest of the world, simply doesn't look like it's open for business, and everybody else is. So we better get with it, and we obviously have to hold the people who've been in power during this period responsible for the situation in which we find ourselves. That's only reasonable and prudent.
Ted Roosevelt, everybody's saying here today, off track, off base, and if that's the GOP that's gotten off track, you know, these things don't happen by accident. What do you think has pushed it off? What's the dynamic that's changed your party in a way that's left you unhappy?
Well, I think, as I think I see it, I think in terms of foreign policy, we had some very smart people, the so-called neoconservatives, that had a great deal of influence on our foreign policy, and it's been very costly. It's been extremely counterproductive, and I don't think that has worked at all.
So very smart people, but how smart can that be?
Well, the way I look at it is, and I hope I don't sound too harsh in doing this, they are smart, but they're about 25 years behind the times. I think we've had the end of the so-called Long War, and by that I mean the period from 1914 to 1990, which was a long conflict which ultimately resulted in parliamentary democracies prevailing in Europe over fascism and communism. That meant that there was an erosion of the nation-state and what the nation-state could do, and we've now entered into what I call a market state and what other observers call a market state.
Should be a great time for Republicans, one would think, on the face of it.
Absolutely. But unfortunately, this administration is acting as if we would have almost acted the way we would have acted 25 years ago, and they remind me of the French generals on the eve of World War II saying, well, we'll have a very good defense against Germany. We'll put up the Maginot Line. And they were completely blindsided by the changes of technology and warfare. And I think this administration is misunderstood and has frankly panicked as a result of September 11th. And they use words like the war on terror. That's, in my opinion, a very inaccurate and misleading way to describe what's underway. We are engaged in a conflict with radical Islam. And to successfully prevail in this conflict, we need other nations to join with us, and we need to use soft power in order to attract the moderate Islamic regimes in the Middle East so that they will support us, and we can slowly try to bring the disenfranchised and the radical parts of these countries, so that they become part of the world system instead of viewing themselves as being outsiders and trying to damage us, Europe, and the rest of the world.
Peggy Goldwater Clay, how do you see the backstory here? If the GOP has gotten off base, off kilter somehow, what's pushed it there, or who's led it there?
Well, we have a president. His name is George Bush. I think he's partially responsible. I think that he's been tending more to the war in Iraq than he has to our country. I think that he assumed that a lot of the nations would get behind him in his decision to go over there, and that just didn't happen.
But let me ask you about something your father famously said. Let's hear the tape right here, 1964, back when you were 19, the Republican National Convention in San Francisco, the Cow Palace. Here he was accepting the nomination for president with a very famous phrase.
I would remind you that extremism in the defense of liberty is no vice. And let me remind you also that moderation in the pursuit of justice is no virtue.
Barry Goldwater, 1964. Peggy Goldwater Clay, those words could almost have been a battle cry for the march into Iraq. Extremism in defense of liberty is no vice. Your dad.
I think that's a battle cry for anything. I think liberty is something that we have here in America that a lot of other countries don't have. And I think that's kind of where this phrase that had been stated before, as we all know, you can use it in almost any situation. Extremism, you have to sometimes go to extremes in order to bring something back to where you need it to be, kind of like the pendulum theory.
But has that sentiment, that Goldwater sentiment, been misused in Iraq?
You know, I can't answer to that. I just know that Dad was called on the carpet, you know, by saying this, and I don't find any fault with it. And I don't think he would... I can't apply that today to the situation in Iraq.
As I recall, he had LBJ on the phone in a hurry after that and did some kind of smoothing of the waters, but there it was, and famously, there it remains. Let's go to our listeners. A lot of them want to join this conversation. We're talking with three heirs to huge Republican names, Theodore Roosevelt IV, Susan Eisenhower, and Peggy Goldwater Clay. Ted is calling from Nashville, Tennessee. Ted, you're on the air.
Hi, how are you today?
Pretty good. What do you hear, Ted? What do you know?
You know, I just finished reading Stephen Ambrose's book on Eisenhower, and I was listening to John McCain on Meet the Press on Sunday, and I was appalled by something he said. When asked about Iraq and how long we'd be there, he said, oh, you know, could be up to 10 years. He said, but, you know, we still have troops in Korea. We've had them there for 50, 60 years, and nobody seems to mind. And I thought how appalled Eisenhower would be if he heard that, because it's completely apples and oranges. You know, Eisenhower got in and very, very stridently found a way to get that armistice and to keep that armistice, and realized very clearly that to escalate that war in North Korea, you were essentially fighting with the Chinese. And if you were going to fight with the Chinese, you might as well go all out and just fight with the Russians. That's where it was going to lead. And I think that it's not just George Bush who's lost his way in this war. It's everybody who's thinking about it, you know, who is a proponent of it. I think Eisenhower would approach this in a much different way. And, you know, this is a guy who kept us out of Vietnam, you know, and this is a guy who understood the difficulties of fighting a long-term war without public support and also without a clear-cut goal and a clear-cut benefit for the United States. So,
and give a hard push to wrapping up that war in Korea as best as could be done. Susan Eisenhower, that was a huge focus of your grandfather right away when he got into office.
Well, let's not forget he actually successfully secured the White House on the pledge to go to Korea. And sort this out. We may find...
Personally go and deal with it.
Personally go and deal with it, that's right. And we may find that the American people deliver somebody to the White House in 2008 on exactly the same notion. I thank the caller very much for that observation. This has been one of my great bugaboos here for a long time. I love history. I'm a student of history myself. I always think to myself, so much to read, so little time, so one isn't able to take everything in. But I'm always amazed at the extent to which the American public or anyone else allows historical analogies to be used without at least some pushback somewhere. I think you're absolutely correct. This is like mixing apples and oranges. And let's not also forget, and I think this is what distresses me enormously, is that the Iraq War, as opposed to Afghanistan, was a war of our choice on our timetable. And I think when we're trying to think about, you know, the GOP failures, but also the collective failures since that deployment, we have to say to ourselves, if we chose the timing on this, why were we so poorly prepared? Everywhere from Walter Reed all the way through the way our troops seized the country. We didn't guard ammo dumps. We didn't guard the IAEA nuclear safeguarded facilities. We didn't guard the cultural treasures of Iraq. They even managed to do that during World War II while they were advancing through Europe. And so I guess this is what I don't understand in terms of taking responsibility. We all have to ask ourselves, how is it that we have a situation where we have this, you know, this slow bleeding in Iraq, and we didn't plan for any of these contingencies?
That from the granddaughter of Dwight Eisenhower, who said, though force can protect in emergency, only justice, fairness, consideration, and cooperation can finally lead men to the dawn of eternal peace, which sounds like a big idea these days. Eve's calling from Jackson Hole, Wyoming. Hi, Eve. You're on the air.
Hi. Now, glad I could get through. And hello, Ted. It's Eve. And
hello, Eve. How are you?
Yeah, I'm fine. Yeah, your granddad had, your great granddad had a lot to do with preserving the landscape around here. I'm grateful for him too, and I'm also grateful as a native Frenchman, although now I'm an American citizen as well, for Eisenhower to be so understanding and clever in liberating Western Europe.
The man who led D-Day.
Listening to the three of you, although I'm a Democrat, I'm hopeful for America, because you talk about women's rights, poverty, environment, the craziness of our foreign policies, and let's hope that you know, you can have some voices in your party, and God bless.
Eve, thanks very much for your call. Ted, it sounds like you all are acquainted. Are you hopeful that the Republican Party, the party that we're hearing critique today, there's time to critique Democrats as well, but are you hopeful that it's changing or not?
Well, I'm very concerned, but I don't want to be driven out of what I call my party by the reactionaries, and I think it's incumbent on us to stay and fight hard against the people who have attempted to take it over. I have a fundamental belief in the wisdom over time in the American people, and I think the ideas that you're hearing from my colleagues on the show today, those over time, I think, will prevail. But it's taken, I have to concede, longer than I thought it would.
Let me take a call from Janine in Walpole, Massachusetts. Janine, you're on the air.
Hello. Hi, Tom.
Hi.
I'm calling with a question, is actually in response to something that your guest said. It seems to me they have a more high, elevated way of looking at the Republican Party. And I was wondering if the advent of talk radio has something to do with the lowering of standards, in the sense that politicians are responding to talk radio, who is in effect responding to the members of the party. Do you think that might be an impact?
Let's ask Peggy Goldwater Clay. What do you say?
Well, I don't know. I think that all media is creating that aura now. I think the media, they're stepping all over each other and trying to get the next news story, and therefore going into the private lives of a lot of our politicians. And personally, I think it's keeping the good political future senators and representatives and governors away from entering politics.
But Ted Roosevelt, talk radio, famously right-wing in its overall coloring. You talked just before the break about reactionaries. Is this a bastion of the reactionaries you're concerned about in the GOP?
Well, ultimately, not. I believe that the more transparency you have, the more that people engage, the more that people talk, the better it is for us in the long term. And sure, there will be shows that I disagree with. But I do like a point that Peggy made, which is I think that sometimes the press does become a little bit intrusive into people's private lives. And we have standards or we get concerned about issues that really aren't relevant to how somebody will serve in public office. And we need to probably bear that a little bit more in mind.
Let me ask you something. If the reactionaries, your word, aren't in right-wing talk radio behind the GOP, where are they?
Well, I think there's some and right-wing radio shows. You see some of the press, I think, I would consider dominated by reactionaries. But I tend to believe that if you have ideas getting into the arena, into the intellectual arena, over time, that's a good thing. What I'm more concerned about is the influence of money and the amount of time that people have to spend to raise money and how they become beholden to political givers or money donors. And I think that the efforts that have been made, which have not been successful, to decrease the role and influence of money in campaigns needs to be encouraged. We need to see more of that. It's pretty clear to me that more money in a presidential or a senatorial or a congressional campaign doesn't help educate the American public, but it does allow people to play in the money-giving game in ways that I don't think are constructive for the republic.
Susan Eisenhower, I want to stick with this cultural interpretation for a minute. The caller asks about talk radio. I don't know if that's the big gun we're looking at here or not, but I do see what the numbers are. Voters asked 5 years ago which party they identified with, and Republicans and Democrats came out about 50-50. No advantage between them. Now maybe half say Democrats and only 35% say Republicans. This is from the Pew Research Center. What's going on culturally? What do you think drove the GOP where it is? And culturally, what do you think is hurting it now?
Well, there have been huge demographic shifts in the Republican Party, and that deserves analysis all by itself. But I'd like to get back to what the listener raised about talk radio. This has, I think, had a role to play in the public discourse, but so has the voices from the other side. What happens is that there's so much shouting in the system now that it requires almost a special act of bravery for moderates to step up and say, we're talking nonsense here, we've got bigger issues to discuss. I really have to say I admire Chuck Hagel for the courageous way he has pursued a number of his issues. The thing is, we've got to, it's time now. I think Nixon called it the silent majority. The silent majority better start speaking up here. Everybody's got to take back the middle ground. I don't know, we all remember Alan Simpson, former senator from Wyoming, who used to say, you know what we say in Wyoming, the only thing in the middle of the road are dead raccoons and squirrels.
But maybe the silent majority has spoken up, and it's put the GOP that you're not so happy with in power. Maybe that is the majority in this country, awakened in fundamentalist churches and in right-wing perspective on the country and the world. Maybe that's it.
Well, I don't believe that. I believe there are only a certain number of states in play during any given election. This all has to do with these narrow margins. Actually, I don't believe this country is red or blue. I think it's purple. It's just a numbers game in a few select states. These elections can come and go, and in a place like Washington, D.C., you don't see any evidence of it on local television because nobody bothers to spend their money in a city where it's obvious what the electoral results are going to be. So I think what we need to do is to change the overall conversation. We need to talk about where this country has to be 20 years from now. And if you look at where this country has to be in 20 years, we've got a very big agenda. We've got aging baby boomers, increasing budget deficits and federal debt. We've got global climate change and the challenge this brings for clean energy. We've got an infrastructure crisis, an educational crisis. It goes on and on. And this is going to require prioritization of our federal spending. and our state spending as well. So I think we've got some very serious things to talk about, and frankly speaking, the American way of life is going to depend on getting this right.
In what has been a pretty Republican period. John's calling from Chesapeake, Virginia. John, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
I have a comment. I've been a Republican all my life. I'm a retired naval officer. So Republican that I paid income tax in Massachusetts for 18 of the 20 years. I was in the Navy, so I could vote against Kennedy all the time.
Oh, boy. That's commitment.
I haven't voted for a Republican since we invaded Iraq. Afghanistan, I think, was a righteous endeavor. Before we finished the job, we went off on one of the most reckless things that could ever have been done.
Why, John? The GOP led it. What's gone wrong, if it's wrong?
I think September 11th has caused the country to pander to fear. I think the government is catering to that. We can, if you give up some liberty, we can make you safer. And I think over 200 years ago, Ben Franklin had it right when he said, if those who part with some essential freedom or security will find themselves neither free nor secure. Freedom has a price, and,
John, I think we've got it. Your phone line is a little bit rough. Let me put it to our panel. Ted Roosevelt, I'm reading here from David Brooks, the New York Times columnist, a couple of months ago, in a column where he says there's all this talk in the GOP about reconnecting with the truths of its Goldwater Reagan glory days. Said, though the old paradigm of that time, liberty versus power, as a Republican battle cry, is not germane anymore. He said the new notion should be security leads to freedom. Now, our caller, John, lifelong Republican, but not voting that way today, says this is going off in the wrong direction. It's freedom being sacrificed to security issues. How do you see it? How do you respond?
I agree strongly with what John said, and I believe that when he talked about pandering to fear, I used earlier in the conversation, I think there's been panic on the part of the administration. I think what we did at Abu Ghraib, Guantanamo, the decision that we're going to have people that are enemy combatants outside the Geneva Convention, I think these are not well thought out, and they've been immensely damaging to the credibility and the leadership that we want the United States to be able to play globally. And I also think that if we have enough confidence in ourselves and we work with other countries, that's a much better way of trying to meet our desire and need for security than giving up civil rights.
Let's go to Colchester, Connecticut, and Michael. Hey, Michael, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom. The pervasive issue that seems to be facing the U.S. right now, of course, is the war in Iraq.
Yep.
Looming on the horizon, of course, is Iran and what's going to happen there. The current administration seems to embrace a militaristic approach to solving international problems. And the U.S. Republican approach seems to be very heavy-handed, almost bullish, under the guise of fighting terror. My question is, where are the diplomatic efforts? And in light of Iran looming on the horizon, what should we be doing right now? I turn that over to anyone that would like to take it. Tom?
Thanks very much, Michael. Susan Eisenhower, how do you respond?
Well, I think, you know, the issue about Iran is very difficult, and I agree with the listener. I think we've got to be very, very cautious in this respect. First of all, we have to ask ourselves a question. Are we really capable of taking military action to solve the problems in Iran, to pursue our interests? And the answer is no. We don't even have an army that we can deploy in the right numbers for Iraq without going back to the same individuals who have done time there more than once, in some cases two and three times. I think we have to recognize that the war in Iraq, you know, was a choice, and it's damaged our military tremendously. And so the notion of taking on using a military solution in Iran is I don't even think on the table.
But why did your
GOP? So then, if it's not on the table, we've got to find another way to address this problem.
Why did your GOP make that turn to the militarism, if you agree that our caller describes, in Iraq? Why?
Well, first of all, we have in the debates, the Democratic debates last week, Barack Obama has been criticized for not using the word retaliate. Retaliate is a highly militaristic term. It's the news media that's baited everybody who doesn't sound like they're, you know, getting tough every moment.
The news media took the country to war in Iraq?
Well, no. I'm just saying that this is all part of the public discourse. Ted's notion that soft power is underutilized, I think, is absolutely correct. It was a pivotal tool in the tool bag that won us the Cold War.
But hasn't your party, the Republican Party, led the kind of sneer campaign against soft power? So we're going to be tough. We're going to be tough right now.
Well, I think, as I say, even this sort of language was being used in the other debates. Ted, help me out here. I think there's no question that it's in the drinking water.
Yeah, I agree with what Susan is saying that, and maybe I'll be a little bit more direct. I think that the intellectual leaders of this administration have been, as the French would say, scarcely brilliant. They have gotten us into a very dangerous situation. It's going to take a tremendous amount of delicate, good leadership to extricate ourselves from Iraq. Everybody knows that the risks of getting out too soon, of genocide, some sort of Sunni-Shia proxy war that brings in the other people, Turkey might feel forced to invade the north in the Kurdish area. The risks, obviously, are very high, but we need not to have gotten ourselves in that position in the first place. And it's just tragic that we're there. But the intellectual leadership in this administration, I think, was fundamentally flawed as how they looked at the world. And sort of privately, but I'll say this publicly now, they remind me sort of dinosaurs. The world has passed them by. They're very smart people, but they haven't recognized the world has passed them by.
But it's your party. Do you see a new era, a new generation in candidates for the 08 run for the White House? First to you, Ted?
Well, I'm encouraged in the sense that I see somebody who's half Democrat and half Republican who might take the opportunity to run. That's the mayor of New York City. I think he's fabulous, and I think he would do a terrific job.
Michael Bloomberg, right out of the box.
Yeah, and, if he decided to do that, because of where he is, because of his pragmatism, under the right circumstances, I think he'd be a very compelling figure.
Peggy Goldwater Clay, do you see someone in the running for 08 who might turn the party away from what you see as its missteps?
Not yet. I'm not real pleased with the people that are running. I'm even looking at the Democrats who are running to see if there's anybody there that could help out, but I don't see it. I don't see any Republicans that have announced yet either.
But heaven forfend the daughter of Barry Goldwater looking over the fence, considering, thinking about it.
Oh, perish the thought, you know. We're allowed to look over that fence.
Absolutely. Liberty.
It's whether we jump ship. That's the big question here.
Susan Eisenhower, how about you? What do you see in the Republican slate for 08?
Well, I think I don't think that we've got a very exciting lineup here as it currently exists. And I think one of the reasons we're here with you today is to express our alarm about this situation, but to let them know that actually parties have to serve the interests of their members, not the other way around. And it's incumbent that the Republican Party start speaking to this wing of the Republican Party. Are they going to lose us? Yeah. And then you could have a political realignment in this country that would be very, very interesting and rather unexpected. I doubt that there would be a wholesale bailout to the Democratic Party, but there would certainly be considerably more independents around, which could change the equation as well.
Have you, would you look over the fence at a vote for a Democratic candidate?
I'm with Peggy on this. I'm absolutely with Peggy on this. I mean, I'd like to see my party produce a candidate that I could support, but I'm an American first, and we've got a big job to do here.
And what if it's you three who are out of step? What if, let's say, Karl Rove's got it right? What if you're history, and there's just a new team on the GOP leading in a different direction. Susan, any self-doubt on that front?
Well, I mean, it remains to be seen. The party's going to do what the party's going to do, and if it's not my party after a certain period, I won't hesitate to vote for people who reflect my own concerns and my own views.
Mm. Their voices and warnings from three descendants of very big Republican leaders. It's been fascinating talking with all three of you. I want to thank you very much for being with us. Susan Eisenhower, granddaughter of President Dwight D. Eisenhower. Susan, thanks very much for joining us today.
Thank you.
And Theodore Roosevelt in New York, great-grandson of Teddy Roosevelt, President Ted Roosevelt. Thanks for being with us.
Tom, thank you very much. It was a pleasure.
And Peggy Goldwater Clay, daughter of Barry Goldwater, joining us from Irvine, California. Peggy, thanks a lot for being here.
Thank you, Tom.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.